960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next couple of hours, you're kind of stuck with me. Anyway, we've got open lines available for the next 2 hours. We're going to talk about cars. To the right of me is my son, Alan. We're going to talk about his history in the car repair business and all the cars he's wrecked and damaged. And we're going to talk to you if you'd like to. 602-508-0960. We got Joe on the line. I'll get to you in just a second, Joe. Joe Smart, he's in early. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. Kurtz is proud to be an independent, family-owned and operated auto repair facility. They were recently recognized as one of this year's Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winners, and I think that says a lot. They opened up in 1987. He works on domestic and import, both gas and diesel. He has ASC certified technician, and Kurt, Jeff, and Eric are all master techs. That's kind of special. So if you don't have a shop near I-17 and Bell, or you're in that vicinity and don't have a shop, then Kurt's Auto Repair is a nice place to just go get an oil change and do that. Hey, good morning to you.
How you doing?
I'm better than the average bear.
Good.
We're going to go to Joe, and you can help me out with any of these. Just okay. Jump right in. Joe, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. Hey, I've got a 53 Mercury, and it's got power steering, and it's not a big leak, but it's just beginning to kind of get weepy. And it's got four hydraulic hoses on it, you know, that are fitted hoses. Can you help me out on where I might be able to find those hoses? I've kind of checked around at Napa and the other places. Of course, no one has them.
Well, we just make those.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. We just take a piece of hose and we have weatherhead or some other kind of fitting, and we just match each one of them. Like you might have a 90 O-ring or you might have a 90 flare. And so there's all those kinds of places. I think what you do, if you want to try it my way, is call a couple of auto parts stores. Now, the AutoZones and the O'Reilly's is not necessarily going to be. You're going to have to go to like a Napa or something like that. And call them up and just say, who makes your hydraulic hoses? Do you have somebody you can refer me to? Now, you can call a couple of shops in your area and say the same thing. Alan, do you know who we refer to?
There's a place, I believe it's in Mesa, called Granberry, G-R-A-N, Berry. I want to say they're at Mesa, or they're at between Mesa Drive and Arizona Avenue on Baseline, north side of the road. They make a lot of hydraulic hoses. There's also a place at like 40th Street and Broadway, Hose Express or something like that. I can't remember the name of it. But those are the two places we go to.
Okay. And then I just bring mine in, and they would make them like them.
Yep. That's exactly how it works.
Okay. Do you, just by chance, I suppose it depends, do you know how much of a turnaround time that might be, day or two or three or five or ten?
Oh, they usually make them while we wait.
Yeah, but he's got five.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Under very extreme circumstances, we had those ones for motorhome. It took them 2 hours the other day. Those were AC hoses.
Uh-huh.
But,
No,
they usually make them right there while you wait. It's faster than getting a big backlog. I mean, if he had 30, I'd be concerned, but not far.
Okay. Yeah, no. Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
No problem at all.
No problem.
Appreciate it. Bye.
And I guess you touched on something that was something that, you know, spiked my ears, but most people wouldn't understand. We did air conditioning hoses on a motorhome.
Yep.
It's a 45-foot motorhome.
40-foot.
40-foot. And we have to run hoses.
This is the dash air, real quick.
Right, dash air. We have to run hoses to the back of the coach, and we have to do it underneath the floor.
Front to back, yep.
Front to back. And they're all tied together, so we have to clip all the ties.
Yep.
We have to cut the hose out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But the hard part is refishing the hose back through.
Yeah, what we do, and it's huge amount of labor, but we'll cut them out, and then we'll take one end down. We'll buy, you know, 45-foot hoses. We'll take one end, you know, we'll take the old ends, take them down there, have them made. Then we'll bring them back to the shop. Then we fish them all the way through. But then we have to clock the other end, because if you get it clocked incorrectly with the crimp, you're in big trouble.
Okay.
So we clock the other end, you know, marker. Okay, we need this here. We do both hoses. And then take them all back out. Send them down there, and then
they crimp
them, and then we bring them back.
Okay, now when you say clocking, just for the period of, let's do it visually. The end in the back of the motorhome, it's going to come to a 90, and it's going to go north. So it's going to go up.
Yeah.
The other end, the 90 might drop.
Yep.
And so we can't twist that hose.
No, that hose is too hard to twist.
So you have to clock each end, and we use the face of a clock. One of them might be 2 o'clock, and the other one might be 8 o'clock or something
Well, it's more the hose rotating in the Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, we just stick it in there, make sure that it's loose and not bound up, and mark it with a marker and send it down.
But you're using one of them as the marker. So you're hooking up the back one, and then you're clocking
one. Yeah, in this case, we did the front one. But, yes, it's the same thing. You can hook up the back one, too.
Okay. That's probably the biggest hose, the longest hose we've ever replaced. Yeah. And we've done a couple of those big motorhomes.
Yeah, the two of them now.
Now, when you take the hose out, when you're underneath the storage compartments, and we have little guys that crawl around inside there.
Elves.
Is that what you call them?
No.
But that gets that's a nice picture. Yeah. So they go in there. Are they going to see the oil leaking from the connection or the oil leaking from the hose?
No, this one's actually blown out, like 2-inch hole blown out. It had been sitting above the turbo about probably 4, 3, 4, 5 inches above the turbo for the last 11 years.
Okay.
And it just finally gave up.
Okay.
And so we just rerouted it to a different spot and put it back in.
But now give me the bid on that. And did you one hose or two?
Both hoses, $2,350.
$2,350.
Yeah.
And we're going to install and pull both hoses so we can clock each end.
Yep. And then evacuate, recharge, do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, take apart the entire back bedroom, you know, move the bed, slide outs. You know, it's a lot of work.
Okay. So the elves are there. I just have that mental picture that we got Eddie and...
We have elves that you don't even know about. They live in the back.
Oh, they live in the back. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
Compressor room.
Are they on payroll or are they just the room and board?
No, we kidnapped them, actually.
Okay, all righty. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Action Auto Repair is up on I-17 in Deer Valley. They're on the northwest corner, family-owned and operated, been around since 83, and I've known Tom since the early 80s. Whatever your repairs need, they have good turnaround time. They have ASE master technicians, and they want you as vehicle owners to understand what they're doing and why. So they're going to ask you to step into the shop often. And here's what we found. This is going to correct the symptom that you came in with. And here is the out the door estimate. Write your check now because it won't be a penny more. That's Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley on the northwest corner. Well, when let's talk about, we had a guy that wrote me an email, and he said that he would like me to bring people on the air to talk about me, what it's like to work for me, what kind of a person I am.
Yeah.
So you've probably been there. Have you been there 30 years?
No, I figured it out the other day because I couldn't lie on whatever I was applying for. So I had to minus my age from 16 to make sure I was legal. But, no, I mean, 16, I'm 40, 24, 23, somewhere in there.
Eddie's been 30. He's the longest
30.
Guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've been around, not only you've been around me personally, but privately. So tell me give me a grade. How have I been doing?
Oh, well, the last, 5 years has been, since you've been gone, has been perfect. No.
There's ups and downs. You can just say it. You're not going to hurt
feelings. No. There is, but there's always a central purpose. I mean, that when people come in here, cleanliness is a big thing with you, and it always has been. But we get 10 compliments a day on, that you could eat off the floor. So it's, there's good. I mean, the guys understand that that there's a method to our madness. There's a reason why we do everything.
And we do get lots of comments, folks. We poured 20 bays in concrete, black concrete, and then we had it sealed. And the guys in the evening time will sweep their bays and then mop their bays, so it's got a really nice black satin finish.
Yeah.
There used to be a time 100 years ago. We have this giant swamp cooler. When I say giant, you could fit. It's probably bigger than your bathrooms, two of your bathrooms at home.
It's 15 by 15 by 15 probably, right?
Yeah. So it's a big, this big monster cooler. And one day I noticed that the guys were sweeping their trash towards the bay doors. And so then they would drop the bay doors and then they'd turn on the cooler and it would blow all the trash into the parking lot. And that lasted about 6.5 seconds because we picked the trash up. We don't blow it to some other place on the lot.
Fully gated, so it just blows it out to where someone else has to pick it up.
Exactly. And what we have is Zamboni, though.
Yeah.
Aren't your kids certified on the Zamboni?
Yeah. They're we're missing the about the top inch and a half of concrete at the car wash. They scrub that stuff so much.
Well, the Zamboni is a street sweeper, a small street sweeper.
Yeah, it's a little ride-on.
I think it's a propane powered or is it gas powered?
No, it's gas powered.
Gas powered. His 10. How old is Mark? 10 or
12?
12. Mark's 12. And the kids come and work. You've got Mark, Rex, and Lexi.
Yeah.
And then we have Josie every once in a while, which is our newest granddaughter. So they come and work. And so what you're saying to the people, the visual that you're painting, is Mark drives the Zamboni over at the
Mark
car wash
for
so many hours that we're missing an inch of concrete there at the car wash.
Yeah, they're scrubbing concrete off that thing, and they're running it so much.
Well, the best part, folks, is there's a round brush in the front to help push the dirt to the middle of the machine. But underneath where you sit, there's this big brush. Now, picture the brush being 12 inches tall.
Oh, full, it's probably like 16 inches tall.
Okay, 16 inches tall.
Yeah, on the tube. So there's like, you know, there's probably 8-inch bristles on each side of like a, you know, whatever, a 5 or 6
Caller
or 7-inch tube.
Calling back.
Okay. All right. So the issue is that the Zamboni wasn't working real well.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be that we manually adjust the brush.
Yeah.
So what you do is you sit in one place, you turn on the brush, it spins, then you back the machine up, and you should see a patch on the concrete of about 3 or 4 inches.
Inch and a half is what I like to see.
Okay.
It just needs to touch it. But
all
yes.
Right. So you opened up the thing and looked at the brush.
Yeah. And you know, it wears down the bristles, and these bristles were, and I'm not even exaggerating, these bristles, if they were an eighth of an inch, they were 10 feet. I mean to tell you, they were an eighth inch. And I said, you guys have got to be joking with me. I mean, these things were, they're supposed to be 8 inches long, and they're an eighth of an inch long.
And they
were
complaining that it wasn't working
well. Yeah,
it
wasn't sweeping right.
Yeah. So what's the difference between me and you? So you can't blame me for being emotional sometimes when you just got through saying that you were talking to the Zamboni drivers and wondering where their head was at.
Yeah, no, yeah, sure. I mean.
Okay. All right, well, anyway, Alan's been with us for 20, 25 years, and he started picking up cigarette butts in the parking lot.
Yep.
And folks, there's many kids that don't even understand picking up cigarette butts in the
right.
parking lot.
Anymore.
Back then, people smoked like crazy. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, and Joe is back. Joe, got a second question?
I do, and actually, I got so excited that you saw my first thing. I forgot my second one. No, I went to one of your shops, Bridwell on Scottsdale, right off Scottsdale Road on Lincoln.
Yeah.
What a good place. I mean, you should be proud of them.
The dad, Bill Bridwell, and I have been friends for probably 35 to 40 years. His two sons are now running that. But the real war horse of that family was Bill's wife. And they're both cowgirls and cowboys. She's won, I don't know how many ribbons on the horse Lena. But both of them are really sturdy, nice people. But the two boys are running it, and they're both retired. And like I said, I've known Bill for a very long time. I trust that they'll do a good job. And frankly, he gets lots of attaboys. And I don't remember the last time I had a comment of a negative variety or a complaint about him. I would say that that's probably... My mind goes back to 8 or 10 years, and I've never heard one. So thank you for saying that.
Well, see, I had this noise in the front end, and they could have said, oh, you need the entire front end replaced, and I probably would have believed them. But it was a shock absorber situation, and, you know, for quite a bit less money than I thought I was going to have to pay, they said, here it is. Now it's as quiet as a mouse, and they were right. So, you know, they get an attaboy.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Joe. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. Bridwell's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's been around a long time. But what impresses me is that story. How many times do we have people bring their cars in and ask for a second opinion? And how many? There are times we agree.
Sure.
But there's a lot of times we don't agree.
Call our bill.
And it's really a matter of symptom and repair. So we hear lots about cracked lower control arm bushings and stuff like that with no symptoms.
Right.
So we'll teach you what to say under those circumstances. We'll be back in a minute. And welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem and my son, Alan Salem. I've got, well, come January, it'll be 40 years in the car repair business, and you've got probably half of that or close to it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think I got your mic on. Let's go to Bill, like we promised. Bill, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, partner. I got an 08
a Ford Mustang, and the blower for my AC works sometimes and sometimes it doesn't. And the only thing that I found that's the key is there's a lower fuse under the hood. If you adjust it just right, it'll come on. Sometimes it'll stay on, sometimes it won't. But it's a big pain because I can't get it to stay on when I want it to. I need some help.
Okay, now let me repeat this to you. There's a fuse underneath the hood that says blower on it. And sometimes when the blower motor doesn't work, you go and wiggle that fuse, and now the blower motor works?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what I can conclude from what you're saying is the fuse isn't blown, because wiggling the heck out of it for the rest of your life and my life wouldn't make it better. So it has to be a bad connection at the fuse. So I think what I would do is I'd pull the negative battery cable on the car, and I would try to blow out, maybe with some electric spray cleaner, electronic component, and I would pull the fuse and clean those two ports out, and then I'd buy a small tube of dielectric grease at the auto parts store, and you put those on the blades of the fuse, and then you set it right back down in. And I would hope that by cleaning up the orifice, the female part of the fuse, as well as the male part of the fuse with a little dielectric, I think that'll work. It's not going to be the button that turns the fan on and controls the speed. It's not going to be that.
Right.
And it's not going to be that the motor is shorted, because if the motor was shorted, that fuse would be blown. And the fuse isn't overheated, means the blower motor's drawing tremendous amps. And if there was a pair of shoes in the blower motor, it would certainly, number one, you'd hear it. Number two, the fuse would blow because it's not capable of tumbling around a couple of shoes. And I'm using an exaggerated example.
Right.
So that's
right.
What I would do if I were you. Okay. A can of, spray electric cleaner and a small tube of dielectric probably won't cost you $10. And that's what
Ooh,
I would do.
I love you, man.
Well, if it works, call me back. If it doesn't work, call me back. All right?
Okay, man. All right, man. Thank you very much.
You bet. Do you, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
Caller Tom.
Tom, good morning to you. How are you?
How you doing, Mark?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. I have a question. I have a 2018 Silverado half ton, and I do driving for a living, so I'm driving a lot of miles.
Okay.
And that 018 right now is at 52,000 miles with no problems.
Okay.
I'm wondering, I know that fluids are based on miles and time.
Uh-huh.
Since there's only 8 months on the fluids, can I go to 60,000 before I change those?
Well, this is exactly what's wrong with our industry in a small amount of cases. I just read a report the other day that says that the dealer's percentage of profit has gone down to virtually nothing because of Costco and all these other places. So the focus is moving on financing. The focus is moving on ads, window tinting, and chrome bumpers and that kind of stuff. Then they have a dock fee that they throw into there. And then they've got a desert protection package they put on the outside. But there's also parts.
Right.
And the parts, the sales portion of the driveway, we're seeing offer. We used to have a 30-60-90 stopping point, okay? That's what it was. There's a lot of them out there that are trying to sell that 30-60-90. You need to open up your owner's manual, and it'll tell you exactly what fluid is due when. And I would follow that exactly. So if you got a tranny service at 80,000 miles, do it at 80,000. If you got a cooling system flush at 110, do it at 110. I don't care about the months. I care about the miles. So that's what I would do. That's the key. When you go to a shop, any shop, a chain, an independent, or a dealer, and they go, I got one the other day. You need to have your injectors flushed and your fuel tank flushed. And I want to tell you, I just about messed my pants. So there's no symptoms. So the driver, who's a friend of mine and has listened, he said, what kind of symptoms are you going to fix with your suggested $350 service? And the service writer stumbles around but basically gives no answer. And then he pulls out his owner manual and says, would you show me where that is in my owner's manual so I can be prepared for that? And the service writer wanted no part of that. So
in
your case, I would use synthetic oil. I would go 10,000-mile oil interchanges. Watch the oil after five.
And I would follow the owner's manual, and you're home free.
The only thing I'm going to... The only thing I'm going to add to this is that we just did a 2018 1500, guy in the same position, but he had 94,000 miles on it in a 2018, and we just did a motor on it. Because they're eating camshafts, and they have been since 2008. I've got a good buddy at a dealership, and I said, what updates has GM done? What do you recommend to extend the longevity of this camshaft? And he said, he told me, you need to change the oil more frequently than we recommend. That's the only thing he said.
Okay. Now, the camshaft is got roller cams on, or roller lifters.
Lifters.
And the roller lifter that runs over the top of the lobe of the cam, we've got some deterioration right there, and we end up with the cam lobe just being ground off. The first hint of problems is an engine miss or a rough idle.
Usually, yeah.
And sometimes codes. So in your particular case, what instead of going 10, should he go 8 on the synthetic? But they use Dexos, and that's a synthetic.
Yeah. I would say 6.
Okay.
Would probably be a safe number. And I don't know how much better that's going to give you. That was just what the recommendation I got. And we see a lot of these things. And
how many have you done?
What I'm doing right now, I have been. Now on my last oil change at 50. I'm already going high mileage, full synthetic, Valvoline.
Okay, now hold on just a minute. You stay there because I'm 15 seconds away from a break, and we're going to take this conversation to the next level. So 602-508-0960 if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. Alan Salem sitting to my right. My name's Mark Salem, and we'll be back talking to you right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We were talking with Tom, and we did the show off the show, which is something we shouldn't do. What you've been told by the guy that we trust at the dealership is change the oil a little earlier than the book says or the minder says.
Uh-huh.
So you got a reminder in your car, and it says due for an oil change.
Yeah.
Okay, that exactly is what happens to me. I'm changing the diesel oil at 10. And the minder might come on at 11 or 12.
Right.
So I'm doing mine every 10. What he has to do is they'll reset the minder when he has the oil change done, or he should do that. But he should just get one of those stupid door stickers or window stickers
right.
And just write the mileage on the window sticker or have them write the mileage on the windshield sticker and then stick with that. I think – what's your Dodge? I think our Dodges are 10 to 12, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I go – 10 to 14 or whatever. Whenever.
Well, I'm sticking pretty close to 10. But my difference is you're all city driving,
yeah, right.
And I'm all you know, pacing and back.
Right.
All righty. Thank you very much, Tom. Good luck to you. Andrew, you're up next. How can I help you?
I'm having time finding a job. And the only way I can get there is a mini bike.
You want to buy a mini bike?
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
All right. This is what I'm going to tell you. If you want to buy a mini bike, I want you to call Adrenaline Motorsports in Casa Grande. Adrenaline Motorsports in Casa Grande. And they've got mini bikes from 3 horsepower to 30 horsepower. They got mini bikes that'll do wheelies. They got mini bikes for young kids. And don't forget to buy a helmet. And so Adrenaline Motorsports in Casa Grande. And just do Adrenaline Motorsports 85122. That's the zip code. And John Neiman, a good friend of mine, owns that. He's the number one Can-Am and Kawasaki side-by-side dealer in the United States. What he does is everybody else gets a price in Phoenix. And the price in Phoenix says, here's the motorcycle, and then we're going to do this, 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 and this, and this. And we put goobers in your tires, and we put special oil in it, and then you pay for a dock fee, and you pay for the Desert Protection Package, which is a wax, and da-da-da. But Neiman, Adrenaline, what they do is, here's the scooter, here's the sales tax, here's the license plate. That's it. We're not packing the ticket with a whole bunch of stuff. So give Adrenaline Motorsports a call. That's in Casa Grande. And for the rest of you, if you're looking at a side-by-side or a Can-Am four-seater.
Motorcycle,
anything.
Quad.
Adrenaline Motorsports is where we buy our stuff. Okay. I've got Andrew.
That was Andrew right there.
Oh, that was Andrew. Yep. Mini bikes.
Anybody else? Jeremy?
All clear.
Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. What else were we talking about off the air? as you're...
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know if that's appropriate for on there.
let me tell the folks about you and I and the competition between we have. I have a Duramax, and you end up buying that Dodge.
Oh, I was going to say, what?
I had a Duramax.
Okay.
Right. And you bought the Dodge.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we loaned it to a pair of twin brothers, and they happened to drag race between the two of them. And I guess your Dodge spanked my Duramax.
Yeah.
And so the next time I needed a one-ton four-wheel drive, I bought a Dodge.
Right.
And I had you do work that you promised was what you did to yours.
Right.
Is it close to?
Yeah. Okay. Same stuff.
All right. Tell me what it is.
We do a lot of stuff.
Okay.
What
do you
tuning and tuning and intake and all kinds of stuff.
Okay. All right. And so is your truck faster than mine? And if it is because of mine's weight, or is my truck faster than yours?
No, it's faster. Mine's faster just because I've already had to replace my turbo. And I've already had to replace my injectors.
Okay.
So, you know, that's... And we went back with the slightly modified set.
Okay, fine enough. Fine and dandy.
But as soon as yours go out, we'll do the same thing, you know, to yours.
I'm really happy with mine.
You'll be more happy.
I'm really happy with mine. I looked the other day, and I was running... I was climbing a hill with a horse trailer, and I was running somewhere around 22 to 26 pounds of boost. Isn't that about twice as much as that thing came with?
No. I think the limit from the factory around 30.
Okay.
So...
All right. Well, I wasn't wide open, so I didn't have the turbo spooling up real heavy. But I also had EGTs, exhaust gas temperatures, to be concerned about.
Sure.
So what is your EGTs? What's your exhaust gas temperatures? When do you start sweating bullets?
Well, I looked down the other day when I was towing the boat, and I was at like 1,500,
okay,
which is about 150 past nuclear. So you back off pretty quick. But 1,350 is where you kind of want to start watching yourself.
I'm flirting between 1,100 and 13.
Yeah.
That's where I'm flirting. Now, folks, the exhaust gas temperature, we have a sensor in the exhaust, and typically it's at the end of the manifold, so we're getting all the cylinders, and we're looking at that temperature. Keep in mind that we want to keep that engine exhaust kind of cool, otherwise we'll just melt things. And so last thing we want to do is melt a piston or, just tear up the exhaust system or have a collapse of one of the pipes because it's red hot.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why you pay attention to that. There's lots of guys that I see up at Payson. They're coming up the hill. They got a 3/4-ton truck. They got a 3-axle gooseneck or fifth-wheel trailer behind them, and they're on the floor rocking up the mountain.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, what's their EGTs? 3/4-ton Dodge, Ford, Chevy, doesn't make any difference. And he's hauling this 3-axle fifth wheel.
It depends, because a lot of them are limited. If they're stock, that's kind of the best scenario, because they're, you know, limited stock. Because when you start modifying stuff, stuff as little as wheels and tires. I mean, when you change wheels and tires, you're changing gear ratio, and all of a sudden the engine is not working in its proper, you know, proper RPM range, and that will raise EGTs. That's why... You know, if you start getting real hot EGTs, you drop it out of overdrive, and it'll go from 1,400 down to 1,050 instantaneously.
Now, when you talk about the computer's going to take control of it, it's going to take some throttle away from you.
Yeah.
It's not going to let you run the throttle wide open. It's going to look at the load and kind of match that. So the computer's smarter than you are.
It's keeping you from hurting something.
Right.
Is basically the way I tell people.
Right. And it's the same way with gas motors. We'll trim the fuel and pull the timing back to make you stop being stupid.
Yeah.
And so you don't hurt the car.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that we see in those kinds of things. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take your call. All you have to do is give us a call. We'll talk about anything you want, but what we're talking about today a lot of is performance stuff. We're talking about turbos on diesels, and of course we have a diesel division that you run, and that's where people come in and want to build their dream truck. And so you can talk about the top five things that people do to enhance the performance or make it look pretty or whatever. We can talk about that. 602-508-0960.
Lane has type 2.
45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan Salem. I handle Salem Boys, and he handles Salem Performance. And we both have a completely different clientele. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. Auto Dynamics has been around since 1982. I've known Chuck since the 70s. And Chuck is the owner, but Derek, his son, is now running it. They have high-quality service they provide. They stand behind the work that they do. They don't pay their mechanics or their staff a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. Therefore, they ensure that you're not going to be sold unnecessary repairs and parts. So if you're looking for a good shop in Sun City and you haven't found one, I recommend you visit Auto Dynamics on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Ivan, you're up. How can we help you?
Hey, thank you. Perfect timing. I have an 06 F-350 diesel, 6.0. It's been bulletproof, only 130,000 miles. I've taken excellent care of this truck and recently noticed, though, that the transmission temperature has been getting up to 180, 180 plus, and everything I'm reading that's too hot. And I wanted to get your take on that. And I just replaced the engine thermostat and put a new, I guess you can call it performance the pan on the truck. So it holds an additional 16 quarts of oil. And I just did that. But it's now below 180, but it's still getting close to it. And
okay, this is a good example of the crap on the Internet. That's what it is. Okay. That's all it is. My Dodge, I have both temperature senders. And my coolant and my transmission are within 10 degrees of one another, maybe 15 if I'm hauling horses. Realistically, your transmission fluid is going to go up to the 200-plus mark. I'm saying 230 to 260 before you're in big trouble. So 180 is normal. 180 is fine. 190 is fine. Look at the difference between the two of them. So cooling system and tranny. Tranny's typically going to be a little higher than the cooling system, but it could also be 10 degrees lower. So as far as I'm concerned, you got a bigger problem because you got a 6-liter, and we work on those like crazy.
Well, it's been bulletproof, so that's really...
Let me... Hold on.
We don't argue with callers.
No, I'm not arguing
with them.
Just
give us your opinion.
Yeah, this is my... Yeah. I hear that word a lot, and that word is the biggest false sense of security you could give a customer. Customer says, "I need to bulletproof this thing." Okay, hold on. We're not bulletproofing anything. We are going to do our absolute best and change out the problem parts. But these 6.0s have a lot of problem parts.
And let me kind of bring that in, Ivan. And I'm not ashamed to say this. Since that 6.0 came out, we have made millions of dollars repairing that 6.0, unlike any other diesel motor out there. Let me give you an example. We, in order to do work on your car, we have a special hoist. We have to disconnect everything from the cab and the bed, and we lift the cab and the bed off the frame. That's 11 hours.
No, that's like 25 hours.
Okay, but taking it off and putting it back.
Yeah.
Okay, so if at $100 an hour, you're talking $2,500 from the get-go.
Yeah.
Then we have to go in, we have to pull the intake, we have to dig out the oil cooler underneath it, and the water, what's that, what's
EGR
leaking water? EGR cooler.
EGR.
Underneath it. And, I mean, we do those all the time. And the more important aspect of the 6-liter is the first year or two, Ford didn't know what was going on. They had us torquing the head bolts. They had us replacing the head gaskets. They had us dancing all around it because we had water in the oil. So finally somebody figures out that the EGR cooler and the oil cooler underneath the intake. So the new parts we put on are substantially better than the parts were taken off.
Yeah.
But just I
had a customer call me and say, I don't care what it costs. I want to make the, and of course he used the word bulletproof, and I said, that's not a word I use. It was 25 grand.
To make it bulletproof or to get it close.
To get it as close as, and that's including, and as you know, head gaskets, head studs, but you gotta pull the heads off. The heads are one of the biggest problems. You gotta have them machined. You gotta have either new heads made or you gotta have the ones reinforced that you have. You gotta get rid of that turbo with the unison ring. I mean, there's EGR cooler, there's, engine oil coolers. There is so much stuff in that mode. And I want you to keep in mind, I drive one every day.
Yeah, and we own one.
My work truck is a 6.0. So, you know, and yeah. I got to tell you something. I've got more in that thing than I have, than we've had in any vehicle.
Stop. He bought this. He bought this white Ford truck, and it had a bad motor in it.
No, it didn't.
We are so upside down in that truck. We have done twice as much work as the value of the truck.
Oh, three times as much work.
Okay, and we're proud of that, right? Who
bought
that
6.0? Well, you know, I also own an 03 Excursion with a 6.0, so I have doubled the trouble with the truck. Exactly what you
Although
mean.
Although that's an awesome rig, though. I'd love to have one of those in a 7.3. Yeah, that's an awesome rig.
And the 7.3 is, you know, obviously one of the best motors Ford ever did. The 6.4, not bad. The 6.8, we're not seeing... We're not seeing much on the 6.8.
No, 6.7.
6.7.
But 6.4 is just as bad
on
as
the transmission. You're saying I'm chasing a ghost then?
I believe you are.
Yes.
And, if, you know, I want to tell you, I pay particular attention because I haul 8-wheeled trailers with Bobcats and Case tractors on them. And I'm real concerned about the transmission. Now, if I see the transmission going up and flirting with 200, I'm not really concerned, but I'll usually pull it down a gear, bring the RPM off, and back off the throttle. So I won't load the transmission. But I promise you, 180 to 200 is an acceptable temperature for the transmission cooler in your transmission. You're never going to hurt it there. So
I will stop spending money.
Please.
I appreciate that.
Please.
No, that's good. That's good. And we're not, this isn't a self-serving thing about the 6-liter because we're not seeing those nearly as much as we used to.
Yeah.
Well, because we've all had to.
Or they're in the junkyard. Yeah. I mean, we still see our fair share of them, but you're right.
A month.
5 to 7 a month, probably.
But are we doing a major?
No, not as much anymore. We're starting to do a lot of the 6.4s, and we're even starting to see some of the 6.7s.
Okay, then you got the 6.6 V8 on the Chevy side, but it's got an Allison transmission, which is better. Then we've got, you and I've got the 6.7 on the Dodge side.
Yeah.
What about the Dodges? What have they looked like? How often are they in?
They're not in often. They have a bunch of turbo issues. And then, you know, all of them have their injector issues. Early in the Dodge cycle, when they first came out, the 6.7s first came out, we did a bunch of head gaskets on them, towing and adding cylinder pressure to them, you know, performance chips. That was a stretch in the head bolts, but
we were making that problem.
The
ads we did created that
not
problem.
Not we, the customers did, but yes. Because there was plenty of them that I did that we didn't have any work to.
Okay.
So, but.
And bulletproof, there are some motors that we've built that are able to withstand abuse a little better than they were when they were made.
Yeah.
That's true. But I feel pretty confident that I could blow up just about anything out there.
I mean, yeah,
without stepping on the throttle and sitting there, I could probably haul enough cows, enough horses to blow up just about anything.
Yeah, I just personally, I just don't like that word because it gives my customers a false sense of security. But I mean, there's stuff to make it better. That word to me just gives me the tingles because I don't like using it because there's nothing out there that's bulletproof, no matter what happens,
no matter what motor.
Yeah, there's nothing.
It can be blown up.
Yeah,
it can be blown up by the driver. And it could be severely hurt by the driver.
Yeah.
And all we have to do is take the exhaust brake off and go down a hill at about 100 miles an hour or go up a hill and try to go as fast as we can, bury the throttle, the EGTs get up 15, 16, 17, we start melting pistons, and all of a sudden that bulletproof motor is not bulletproof.
Yeah.
So anyway, Ivan, thank you. Thank you for calling in, and thank you for letting us talk about the 6-liter. But like you said, once we do some work to that motor, then the longevity and turbo work, the longevity of that motor is enhanced dramatically.
Yeah. I mean,
but I ask you one more question about EGTs.
Sure.
I've always been a stickler trying to keep the temp at 1,000 or below. Even in Poland, I try to keep it below. I'd get up to 1,200 when I'm pulling a heavy load up the Payson or something. But am I, again, chasing a ghost, being at below 1,000?
Hold on.
He's talking to me. Hold on.
No,
he's got his arm up.
No.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm talking to you. Hold on. Where is the probe? Because that makes a huge difference.
Honestly, I don't know.
Okay. A lot of people put the probe mistakenly. It does not belong there, but a lot of people put it on the outlet side of the turbo. We don't care about the outlet side of the turbo. We care about the exhaust manifold. You need to be as close to a piston in the exhaust manifold as you have. If you're running it behind the turbo, 1,200, you know, 11 to 1,200 is probably a good number because that means down at the Pistons it's 1,400. So in a perfect world, that needs to be in the exhaust manifold. Like I told you last weekend, I wasn't even paying attention talking to my wife, and I was at 1,550. Now it was for 10 or 15 seconds, and I backed right off. But 1,350 is kind of the good number if the probe is in the correct spot.
And on that, his 6 liter, it's a V8.
Oh, I was talking about my Dodge.
I understand.
Yeah, okay.
But the manifold is the front two cylinders to the back two cylinders.
Yeah,
and normally manifold. What we want to do is grab the end of one of those runs.
Honestly, yeah. It's whatever's easier because you got to get a drill in there.
All right.
It's a pain in the butt.
Drill and tap and put your EGT in there. I want to tell you something. I was with the cowboy not too long ago, and he was racing somebody up the rim. And I kept screaming at him to tell him I was scared and that he needs to slow down. But I saw his EGTs at 1,600 and felt like we were going to walk home.
It's been there too. Yeah, that's the first thing you need to find out. Once you find that out, then you can get a better idea of what
where it's at,
of where you need to be.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be hard to find it because it's going to be the only electronic sensor that's in your exhaust system. Anything with a wire. I don't know if anything else is in the exhaust system.
Well, late model stuff has it, but do you have a programmer on the truck or no?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You have a programmer?
What brand
is
it?
I do.
Yeah, what brand is it?
I can't remember. I
Bully Dog?
Yeah, I don't remember. It's been so long.
No, that's fine. Follow the module on the tuner under the hood. Follow that because there's usually a steel braided line that comes off of that.
I have seen that, and I think it is off the exhaust.
Okay, if it's off the exhaust, 1350 is no issue.
The exhaust is in front of the turbo. We don't want it behind the turbo.
The sensor. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. If it's in the exhaust manifold, that's where it needs to be. If it's in the exhaust off the downpipe, that's not where it needs to be.
Yeah,
it's off the manifold.
Okay, perfect. Good. Then that's good. And 1350, no issue.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to run 1350 or higher for here to Tucson.
No,
I mean, but it's, you know why it's getting hotter. You're almost to the top of Payson, and if you drop it down a gear, bring the RPMs up. If it cools down, then just keep going.
Yeah.
And there's no heartache. Anyway, thanks, Ivan. Thank you very much. And that it wasn't fair for me to say that we work on Fords all day long because that's not true.
No.
We work on GMs and we work on Dodges.
Yeah, plenty of each.
Plenty of the diesel apparatus.
So it's a,
but you know what? Ivan took it pretty well. We teased him, and he took it pretty well.
He knows. He's a smart guy. He owns two of them. He's well aware. He's well aware.
But it's not too often that we get something nice. Hey, folks, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and Alan Salem's sitting here next to me, and we're talking about car repair problems and stuff like that. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. Okay, the commercial before...
No.
was Dennis Prager. The synopsis, I think, is correct. Dennis Prager wants your attention for 6 hours, and he's going to explain to men... to women.
Yeah.
To women about what men are all about.
Yep.
Okay. What do you got to say about that?
All I said was I could do that in 15 seconds. That's all I said.
And what would you say?
No, I'm not getting into that. I can tell you, I can do it in 15 seconds.
Go ahead.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Go ahead. I'll take the beat.
No. I'm not going. No. No.
You can. It'll take you 15 seconds to explain to women.
Yes.
What men are all about.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, that's if I stutter.
Luckily, we have a caller name.
Oh, no. Come on. Spit it out.
No. We have a caller. Come on. Sorry, Jeremy.
You said something.
No, come on.
You could teach him 15 seconds what men want. You said there's only... one thing.
Okay.
One thing that men want, and I agree with you.
A warm dinner. But that's what I was talking about. That's it. And if I have to cook it myself, I'm okay with that. That's what I meant, and that's what I said, and what I meant.
Okay. All right. Listen, I'll take the beating. When they call me in Monday morning, they're going to say, "Did you really say this?" I'm going to say, "Yeah." So beat me up, send me home, put me in the closet.
Nick, I don't care. Or you want to do your...
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Thompson's is the only place in Mesa that I can tell you to go. There's other good shops there, but they just don't fit the criteria. They don't have what it takes in different areas to be able to be on my best car repair shops list. Thompson's has been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma come from two families that have been in Mesa in car repair since the late 60s and early 70s. They have ASC certified technicians. They issue friendly reminders to let you know when your vehicle may be due for service. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, Main Street, just east of Stapley in Mesa. Main Street, east of Stapley in Mesa. All righty, we've got a caller on the line. And
Nick.
Nick, how are you, buddy? What can we do for you?
Doing good, Mark. Hey, and since you did that commercial for Thompson's, let me just tell you, last week or the week before, on a Saturday, driving home, all of a sudden my 2006 Chevy Colorado with 380,000 miles just quit. So I had a feeling it was the fuel pump. So I have that car insurance, you know, with the guy with the khakis.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, so I got to call him to get a tow truck. Of course, the whole thing is all automated and couldn't get through, couldn't get any signal. So I figured, you know what? I'm close to where Thompson's is. I'm just going to call Thompson. They called me back right away, picked up my car within a half an hour, took it up there and got it all fixed and everything. And they did, you know, everything was fixed perfectly.
Good.
But now to my problem that I have. And I'm going to ask Alan, because I don't think after today you're going to be on the show anymore.
Yeah. You know what? It's okay with me. It's okay.
I know.
I've been in trouble before. I don't care.
Yeah. So, Alan, I've got a 2006 Chevy Colorado with 380,000 miles on it.
Okay.
I'm getting, like, what is like a wheel noise, and I don't think it's the tires because I just bought them. And I think I know what the problem is. I'm not sure which side, though. I make a right turn, the noise stops. So is that a left wheel hub and a bearing?
Yes. Well, no, not necessarily. Okay. Not necessarily. If he makes a right turn,
it loads the left side.
But it loads the outer bearing on the left side and the inner bearing on the right side.
Well, but it's a hub assembly.
Okay, but still, it's got two bearings and it doesn't have one.
Yeah.
So the real issue is if you can sit in the passenger side floor and put your feet on the floor mat real good and have somebody do right turns, you know, at the parking lot on Sunday morning, you can typically figure out what it is. But I don't agree that it's automatically the left side.
Yeah.
So it could be either side. At 230,000 miles, is that what you said?
380.
You know,
where do you drive?
Women are chasing him.
I drive from Phoenix to Tucson every day.
13 years, he's got 390,000. Holy cow.
All right.
Well, hey, Alan, wait. This is low mileage compared to my other 2006 Chevy Colorado.
Oh. Wow.
That one has 695,000 miles.
See, that's Chevrolet right there for you, boy. And that says a lot about your care for that. You didn't overheat it. You didn't run low on oil. You took good care of it. Let me talk about the wheel bearings. Really, at this mileage, I think you should do both of them. Why do them one at a time? You're going to have the left apart or the right apart. Why don't you just do both hubs and get it done with? And I just think with that 400,000 miles is
16.
Is 16 times around the girth of the earth.
Right.
You've driven the equator 16 times.
Every week you got to throw that in, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, people need a perspective. Somebody came in the other day and said, well, I only got 20,000 miles on my tires. Well, that's almost twice around the equator.
No,
what
that's
do you
once.
Want?
Yeah.
What's that?
That's once.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, it's okay. Once. My math is screwed up.
On my yellow truck, I got 200,000 miles before I had to replace the fuel pump on that one.
And that tells me you never run below quarter tank because the fuel pump in the tank is lubricated and cooled by the gas.
Yep.
The people at ASU that run off the bottom eighth or the bottom sniff of the gas, we put fuel pumps in their cars all the time because those kids run off the bottom of the tank. So, yeah, I can give you a reason why everything that you've done, and there's a direct relationship between that. But
now, right. on the 06 Colorado, is there... When you can't buy because the bearing is sealed in the hub. So where is the other bearing? Behind the hub?
No, they're they're all inside that hub assembly.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't.
So you just buy the hub assembly. Yeah, you just buy the hub assembly.
Yes.
And you're getting both bearings replaced.
Yep.
Yes.
But are you saying I should replace the left side and the right side?
I think
or
you
just
should.
The left side.
No, Alan's guessing it's the left side, but I'm going to disagree because it can be the outer on the left and the inner on the right because we're loading those two bearings. So my point is buy two hubs, just jack it up and replace the two hubs, and you'll be a lot happier. Now, once you get the hub off, you'd be surprised. Sometimes you can't rotate the hub and feel which one was bad because you can't possibly load the inner or the outer. So I'm saying that if I'd go with you to California and take a trip, but I'd rather you just do both of them. And I think that's what's in your best interest. 10-4?
10-4. You guys have a good day.
All right,
you too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thank you. It's okay for you to disagree with me. Just remember.
No, you're right. I mean, it could be the inner on that side. But I would say, 95% of the time it's – and you probably could hear what side it's coming from. So
sometimes you can feel it. That's why putting a passenger in the floorboard and having them put their feet flat on the floorboard, then you drive and you've got your feet, your left foot on the floorboard, and then you switch places.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like we had a whistle the other day, and Ron got in the back seat, and he says it's on the right side. And so then he drove, and the other guy sits on the left side. Then he sits on the right side and says, oh, yeah, the noise is here.
Yeah.
So it makes a difference just – and you the model of, switching around is always better. Speaking of really good shops, Blackwell Automotive is up in 40th and Greenway. I've known Tom for a long, long time. And actually, most people think that we're two peas of a pod. We're twin brothers of different mothers and all those other nifty things. But he does oil changes to engine swaps, domestic and imports. He knows what he's doing. He has a good crew, a good shop. He's a little bit of a tyrant, I think, like I am. He knows what he wants, and he has a good staff that accomplishes that goal. Both of us, him too, and more than me probably, he has a real focus of what customer service is. And I think really good shops in town will mimic Blackwell in this respect. We talk to the customer at the front counter and get enough information to hone in on something. Then we go take it for a drive or take the customer and have the customer show us the noise, the vibration, or whatever. Then we go in and diagnose it, and then we give them an estimate. Then we order the parts. We put the parts in, and here's the most important part of that repair process. The technician has to go drive the car and make sure the noise is gone. Because if not, then he was guessing, and then we have to decide who's going to pay for the first guess and who's going to pay for the repair. So it's that kind of an issue. Blackwell's a good guy for that. He knows the difference between guessing and fixing, and you, as a customer and a consumer, should know that as well. There's some other self-defense for car expense stuff, but it's focused towards women because most of the guys won't admit that they don't know everything about their cars. But ladies, the most important thing is why don't you write down your estimate, write down the symptom, and just put a number there, and just put it on the back of your business card. If they're pulling your leg, they're not going to do that. What happens a lot is the technician in the back, whether it's an independent, a chain store, or a dealership, the technician in the back needs some more hours for the week. So he says that the lower control arms on your Honda Accord are bad, and they're cracked. So the service writer sells you on that idea, but they've never seen the bearing or the bushings. They've never driven it. So you say, what symptoms are you going to fix with your suggested $350 repair? And they say, well, I don't know. And say, well, I'll wait here while you go talk to the technician. Or can you call the technician and ask him, what symptoms are you going to correct that I have? Because, folks, if you got lower control arm bushings that are bad, it's going to clunk on a stop or it's going to clunk on a takeoff. It may do just one or it may do both. But if you got a clunk when you stop and you got a clunk when you go, then it's some part of the front suspension is moving and lower control arm bushings typically is that
check.
It. So those are the kinds of issues is what symptoms. But when you have them write it down and sign their name to it, that really puts them in a bad position. I am happy when customers say, I want you to show me in the shop. Boy, we'll drag your butt out there in a heartbeat. So will a lot of shops, other shops. I'm not the only one. They do that too. Come out here. I want to show you. I want you to look. If you go to Instagram under Salem Boys Auto, you're going to see my daughter. when the technician takes off the old motor mount, he has the new one in his hand. My daughter, Andy, makes him put the both of them side by side, and she takes a picture and she puts it on Instagram. So you can see what a bad motor mount looks like and what a good motor mount looks like. You can see what are some other examples. What a bad evaporator and a good evaporator, the new ones. What a bad radiator looks like and the new radiator. So those are the kinds of things that we need to do we need to do a better job as somebody in the auto repair business. So 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open, and this is what happens. We're at the 45-minute time frame here, so before we're done, and between now and the top of the hour, we're going to be flooded with calls. So if you want to get in, now's the time, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Very funny. Jeremy, who's running the board right now, he's the producer, the director, he's the editor, he's the one that put that together for me. And so I've always been appreciative because people do mention that. Nevertheless, automatic transmission has been around in Phoenix since 1968. Automatic Transmission Exchange is the only place I suggest you go if you have a transmission problem. He's on 40th Street in Washington on the north side of the road. Phil is a great guy. His staff are really good, and they don't rebuild every car that comes in. A lot of times it's a bad connection or a shift solenoid or an engine miss. So if you're looking for a good transmission shop, it's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Chuck, you're up first.
Yeah, hi, good morning. 14 Volkswagen Passat. I'm due for a brake job, and my question has to do with the rotors and turning the rotors, and do I need to replace the rotors, and do they warp, and how do I know when they need to be turned? And,
okay.
Well, the only risk factor, the pads.
Okay.
Wearing out faster.
Okay.
If you don't change it.
Okay. The rotors, if they pulsate the brake pedal, then they're warped, and they need to be trued. The rotors also have a measurement on the back side of them, and it says don't turn below 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So a guy with a micrometer is going to mic it and say you don't have any meat left. You've already worn them down to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Or he says, oh, you've got a 16th of an inch on either side. So he trims the rotors, and he gives them back to you. Or you can take them someplace and tell him, I want a finished cut. I just want you to just drag that knife across both sides of it. So there is no life on a brake rotor. It's either good or it's bad, and that guy with 380,000 miles on his Colorado could very well be on his original set of rotors.
Yeah. On the back, it'll say discard measurement. And if it's there or within, I don't know what each cut is, 30 thousandths, 15 thousandths.
It just depends how aggressive set the knives.
And you just can't go below that, period. So.
And it'll say millimeters or inches, and if you have some digital calipers, you can measure it yourself. So I wouldn't replace the rotors because you think your car's going to love you more. I think just take a quick measurement or take it down to one of those auto parts store and say, measure it, show me what you got, and then if it's good, they'll cut it. Or they may say, this is fine, just put it back on. There are some times we don't kick a finish cut on the rotors. There are some times we leave them alone. Thank you, Chuck. That's a great question, though. Jim, you're up next. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. I have a question. I have a 2009 Chevy Tahoe with the rear air conditioner. When you put it on, you got hot air that blows out of the heat vents out of the bottom in the back, so nothing will come out of the roof vents.
Has it ever produced heat out of the roof vents?
No. Just like when you turn it on, the rear air conditioning, it feels like it's hot air coming out of the heat vent, but nothing is coming out of the roof vents.
Okay. I'm a little confused because the high vents are typically air-conditioned-only cold air, and the low vents are typically hot air.
Yes.
Okay. That's what it is normally, I think.
Exactly. I mean, you got air conditioning coming out of the front vents, but we cannot get the air conditioning to come out of the...
Okay.
The roof vents.
Okay, so what you're saying is the blower motor, there's no air coming out of the back unit, and there's air coming out of the front unit. Well, there's a blower motor back there, and the switch, sometimes the blower motor gets bad, and it starts using a tremendous amount of electricity, which melts the switch up front. So sometimes you have to replace both. But that's a pretty easy diagnosis. Is just go to the switch and see if we're sending power back there. Pull the cover down, check to see if you have power. And then you'll know whether it's the blower motor or the switch. If you take a 12-volt battery and hook it up to the blower motor in the back and the fan comes on, then it's probably going to be the switch.
Resistors in there, too. Yeah. Okay. Those are real bad. Yeah.
All righty. All right. Thank you very
much. Okay. You can hear the blower motor going.
Well, you should. Here's another thing you can do is turn it on medium, number 3 speed,
okay.
And take your fist and hit the package in the back where the blower motor is. Don't break anything, but if you hit it and the blower motor comes on, then the blower motor's bad.
Okay.
Okay? Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much. Mike, you're up next. How can I help you?
Oh, hey, buddy. Hey, you may have just paid me some money. I just wanted to verify with you.
Okay.
Yes, my daughter's got a 2004... Infiniti sedan, and about a year ago, I bought two new front tires at one of those Mexican places, and they're ruined already. I kind of blame her because she's a dumb kid. I hit a whole pothole. But anyway, they told me that the lower control arms were bad, and they diagnosed that by why it was up. They kind of crawled underneath and, you know, grabbed the wheels and just kind of shook whatever. So anyway, there's no thud or anything, but what was wrecked was the inside of both front tires. You know what I mean? Like, everything, tires look good except for that inside-outside, I should say, you know.
Okay. Well, yeah, tire wear is one of the symptoms that we need to look at. So if you have tire wear problems that are abnormal, then they match something that's wrong. This could be a variety of things. It can be a caster problem, a camber problem, and it can be a toe problem. So the easiest way to figure this out is put it on an alignment rack and kind of shake the front end while the heads are on it and see if we can move the numbers around. Now, if both
of them... No thud,
though. What?
Since there's no thud that you described, can we rule out the control arms and maybe imagine a way it's an alignment once they get it on the rack and check it out?
No, you can't rule it out because the guy on the radio says that you need to rule it out.
Oh, okay.
No. Yeah, you put it on the rack, and a good senior guy with gray hair and gray hair out of his nose is going to know what to do. If he finds the camber all screwed up, he'll say it's the camber. It matches the inner wear on both tires. If he says the caster's messed up, it's not going to be a caster problem because the caster wears the outside edges of the tires as we turn right and left. So it won't be a caster. And he looks at the toe, and he says, yeah, the toe is towed out, so we're scrubbing the center or the inner area of the tire. You have to diagnose it before you can repair it. That's the bottom line. Now, lower control arms, like I said before, when you come to a kind of hard stop, there's usually a clunk, and then you stop, and when the light turns green, you kind of accelerate extra hard, and there's another clunk. That means the arm is moving forward, clunk, and it's moving backwards, clunk. Most of the time on bad bushings, you'll have that clunk.
Did I hear you say that you were wearing both tires on the inside and outside?
No, just the inside.
Oh, okay, just the inside. Yeah, that's
okay. I haven't changed my mind.
Nope.
And what you don't want is some young kid that just was born yesterday, and he looks it on the screen, and there's a couple of red marks there, and he goes, oh, well, this is what it is. No, you have to look at the red marks and then apply them to the wear on the inside of the wheels, inside of the tires. So you just can't look at the red, because the red could be a camber red, and a camber has nothing to do with the inside of the wear of the tires. So there's three angles, camber, toe, camber, caster, and toe, and one of them has nothing to do with what you're talking about. Anyway, thank you very much, Mike. That's a great part of the question. Bill, you stay right there because I'm not going to be able to get you and deal with you and give you time. So stay right there. We have four lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is up on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. They're good diesel guys. Nate is a good friend of mine. I like him. I trust him. So it's easy for me to send the diesel guys up there. He does all kinds of diesels, but specifically foreign and domestic light-duty diesel trucks. Their website's open 24 hours a day, so you can look at some of the stuff that they sell. But for an oil change to my car won't start when it's cold, or my truck won't start when it's cold, whatever you've got, if you live anywhere near I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in North Phoenix, I want to suggest that you stop by or talk to Nate from Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. We have four lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We want to talk real quick about Larry Harker's Auto. Larry Harker's Auto is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. They really do a good job. Not too long ago, they were looking at a BMW, and the estimate was $2,000 or $4,000 because it was blowing water out of the vents. They found that the vent or the drains in the evaporator case were plugged up. They unplugged them, a bunch of water came out, no more mist, and I think the repair bill was like $128. So they're really good at what they do, but they also do oil changes and cooling system flush, transmission services. So Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, been around since 1967. Did I read that right? Yes, 1967. Bill, I can help you. What can we do?
Yes. I got a 2005 GMC Duramax, and my question is the dashboard lights. The odometer reading at night, it's bright. I can read it, no problem. As soon as I get out in the sun, I can't even see it. Is there anything wrong with the dimmer switch or something else?
Are you rotating that little wheel next to the headlight switch up?
Yes, it's all the way up.
It's all the way up?
It's all the way up all the time, yeah.
All the time, okay.
I think we just need to see, the dimmer does mileage and the rest of the dash. Mm-hmm. And so we should have the entire dash dim and get brighter by using the rheostat, they call it. So I think somebody just has to look at that. What part of town do you live in?
I live in, North Phoenix, north of Union Hill and 35th Avenue.
Okay. I'd just go over to Action at I-17 in Deer Valley, or I'd go over to Kurtz and maybe ask them, or maybe stop by later in the day when it's kind of dark, maybe take a blanket and put over the front windows of your car and just ask them, I want to demonstrate something to you. Would you tell me if something's wrong? That's all. That's all. And so I think both of them would accommodate you, not on Monday morning or Friday afternoons for obvious reasons, but I'm quite sure that they would. Everybody wants to look at it before they can determine everything's okay. You could have one of the bulbs burn out of the odometer. If there's two, I don't know.
And those things had a lot of cluster issues. Those year GMs in general had a lot of cluster issues. So it could be something with the cluster. I mean, it could be a number of different things.
But we can send it out and have it fixed.
Yeah.
So that's an easy thing. We've done that before. Anyway, thank you very much, Bill. Tom, you're up next. How can I help you? Tom?
I'm going to ask you. Yeah, are you there? Mark?
Yes, go ahead, Tom.
Report card on the CVTs and the Hondas. What are you seeing on those? I know some of them are fairly new.
Okay.
Maybe some of them are starting to get some miles.
All right. Are you on a speakerphone by chance?
No, I'm just on my...
Okay. All right. On the CVT, the constant velocity transmissions, they have one gear. The idea is good. The problem is when there's a problem, nobody can fix it. When there's a problem, oftentimes all you can do is replace it with what we call a crate unit, and that eliminates all your options of having it diagnosed and repaired or having it overhauled. You are stuck with one vendor and one transmission, and I don't like that idea. I think CVTs are a good idea. I just think that the rest of the industry should have access to the testing equipment and the classes and stuff like that. So I can tell you, I don't know a single repair shop in the Valley that's going to do anything other than replace a CVT. So I'm not a fan of them, but certainly you can do what you want, but I'm not a fan of them. It's like having a car or a part of the car that only one person can work on, and every time they work on it, they have to replace the whole thing, just like Bill with his dashboard. There's guys out there that can pick and choose through that dashboard and fix it, but if you only had one guy and all he says, I'll put a new dash in there, that's kind of the way we are with CVTs.
And they're not cheap.
And they're not cheap. That's exactly right. All righty, Tom. Thank you very much. Let's go on to Fred. Fred, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. New GMC Canyon.
Okay.
And I'm looking at the tire pressure in the morning this morning in the garage, which is fairly warm anyway. Front tire pressure down to 31. Rode it about a mile and a half or so, and it's up to 33, 34, should be 35. Question number one, are the tires good or bad? Question number two, would it hurt to pump them up to 36 if they go down a little bit?
What you describe is perfectly normal, but we set the temperature at 35 when it's cold. And the reason we do that is the tire is developed and designed to handle any increase. They've already dialed that in. And they certainly dialed in I-10 from Florida to Arizona, and certainly Arizona. So we do cold inflations. So I want you to set them all at 35 cold and don't worry about where they go. I can promise you they're not going to go up more than 3 or 4 degrees. But it's built into the tire. I have that from tire experts all over the United States. They've regurgitated that the same. So don't worry about what you got. Just pay attention to what they are cold. Okay?
Okay. I'm sitting outside of Costco, and I was going to have them pump it up another 1 or 2 PSI. I'm better off to pump it up at home with just regular USA air.
Do you have compressed air at home?
Yeah.
Okay, well, do it at home. Now, if you didn't have a compressor at home, I would say to you, have them bring the tires up to 36, and then tomorrow morning you can let the air out. You see what I'm saying? Okay. So, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
We're set.
And when we say, real quick, when we say cold, we don't mean, 30, 40 degrees. What we're meaning is cold means when the vehicle has been at rest for an extended period of time. Because as they get, as you drive it, it gets warmer. So cold is more of after it had been at rest for a while.
Yeah, that's right. They haven't been moving for a while.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Paul, you're up next. Paul, how can we help you?
Yes. Mark?
Yes.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a 1996 Grand Cherokee Jeep, and I just put a new air conditioning unit, the whole kit. And right after I got it back, my oil pressure drops down to zero when it's idling. What could be the problem there?
Well, I can't diagnose that. Somebody has to diagnose that. The question is unscrew the oil pressure switch, stick a manual gauge in there, and, oh, look here, I do have 40 pounds. Oh, but that sender was just saying zero. So let's put a new sender in it. Oh, the dash is working now, the gauge is working now. Or I've got 40 pounds and it's not talking. I put a sending unit, it's still not talking. Now I got a dash gauge problem. So I can't tell you, but it'll be a dash light problem, or it'll be a sending unit problem, or the third is bad, and that's you really do have low oil pressure. But if you have zero on the oil pressure, the engine should be clattering after about a mile. And if you don't have any engine clatter, then it's going to be probably, if you want me to guess, an oil sending unit. If you want me to guess, that's what it is.
And if you're asking if it has anything to do with the AC, unless they inadvertently knocked it off or knocked the wire off or did something like that, it has nothing to do with the AC. That was just done.
Well, and let me put some emphasis on that. No one knows whose fault it is until we fix it.
Right.
Now, if that oil pressure switch is underneath the air compressor and it's been disconnected and they just replace the air conditioning compressor, we know whose fault that is.
Right.
Okay?
Hey, would it, because for some reason I've always run 1040 and they put 510. Would that make it go on?
Well, I bet they put 520 in it. I don't know that there is a 510, but.
Well, 520, right.
Okay. Your oil pressure gauge cannot determine on a warm day, it cannot determine the difference between one oil and the other. I think it's a good idea that they put 520 in it. What kind of mileage interval did they tell you to change it in?
What do you mean by that? I don't quite get that.
Well, here's the deal. Conventional oil is about 3,000 to 5,000 miles. You change it. A blended oil, half synthetic, is 5 to 7,500. A full synthetic, which is what your 520 is 10 grand and north.
So, or 75 to 10 grand.
Yeah, 75 to 10 grand. So it's one of those things that if you're going to put premium oil in it, take advantage of the premium oil and go the distance. Just check the oil every once in a while. All righty.
Well, what I do, I usually change the oil, but being that was in the shop, they went ahead and changed it, I told them. But I usually just run 1040 on it.
1030 or 1040. Well, on this oil change, you can go longer if you want, but you can change it at 3 or 4,000 miles however you want. If you're going to go back to 1030, go back to 1030. The motor doesn't care if you put 520, 530, 1030, 1040, 2050, straight 30, straight 40, straight 50. Motor doesn't care. All righty. I got to run, but thank you very much. And I think Patrick is next, but we're going to have to take a break. We'll be back in a minute, Patrick. Here so that we can get going. Alan Salem sitting here next to me. I'm Mark Salem, and we were talking about a little earlier about men, right? Mm-hmm. Men. I want to know how many guys go to Starbucks and buy a black tea lemonade.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I went to Starbucks.
That's a really poor example because that yeah. I get a lot more foo-foo stuff than that.
I went into Starbucks one time in my life. I asked for truck driver black coffee, and they almost fell off their chairs. They don't even have regular coffee. They don't even have.
Yes, they do.
Don't. No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't.
Yes, they absolutely do. I see people get it all the day.
Regular
time.
Coffee.
Yes.
Just
no
regular,
foo-foo.
No foo-foo.
No.
All right. Well, I'm going to try it, but I'm going to next week. If you're fibbing me, then I'm going to call you on it. All righty, Patrick. What's up, buddy? What can we do for you?
Oh. I don't drink coffee.
And I don't, but, I'm not drinking theirs either, but nevertheless.
You know, I have a 2010 Dodge Caravan that I've been having quite a bit of trouble with. Here a number of months ago, when we started driving it, all the dash lights started coming on and blinking.
Okay.
And the speedometer started, and when it was doing that, as we were going, it would go down to zero. It would just go off as if you were turning off the car almost. And I headed into a couple of shops, and then I headed into the dealership a couple times. And if you come to a stoplight or stop, and it blinks on you like that, it'll die on you, and you have to start it up.
Okay.
What has happened is they've replaced a lot of things. They replaced the brake switch, the powertrain.
Okay, stop though. Patrick, it makes no difference what they've replaced because they haven't fixed it yet.
Well, so, good point.
Yeah. I mean, they could replace everything in the world, and it's just not fixed yet. Somebody has to pick one of your symptoms and chase it. So the dying and stalling would be the one I'd want to chase because I think they're all related, and I think it's entirely mm-hmm. possible by the time you pick one, you fix them all. So the easiest one that you've talked about is that there's lots of dashboard problems. Certainly a call to a dashboard facility. Who do we send to ours, dude? Do you remember?
Dick Speedo.
The dashboard stuff?
Yeah.
So call Russ at Dick Speedo and describe your caravan problem to you and just ask him if he has an idea. And if he says no, you say, how do you check it out and how much does a checkout cost? And that's what you do.
And we just had one in here the other day that they ran a lot of the PCM or BCM stuff through the cluster, and we ended up having to replace the cluster due to a lot of the same exact issues that he's got.
On the caravan. Or on the Dodge.
This was a Town and Country.
Okay.
But it's still a Chrysler.
Right.
I don't remember what year it was, but they may run a bunch of that stuff through that cluster.
And it's probably true. They're probably gathering temperature of the engine and temperature of this, and they're probably gathering some of that information.
Yeah.
If you need a cluster, then they're going to reset the odometer to back to where it was. But it also can be a loss of communication between the PCM, which is the power control module, and the cluster. So somebody just has to track that down. But you need to tell them what has been replaced so that they'll think mm-hmm. twice about replacing it again. Okay?
Caller
Deborah. And the name of the place one more time.
Dick's Speedo and Tack. Dick's Speedo and Tack. Yeah, it's over on in Tempe on McKellops and
Hayden.
And Hayden. All righty, Patrick, thank you very much. Get your headphones
Hold on. Hold on, you got one more caller.
Okay. One more caller. Who we got?
Caller Deborah.
Deborah, good morning.
Hi. I don't have my radio on, so I can't help if you're on radio. Okay, sounds good. I've gone to a variety of people from the dealer to O'Reilly's, and is it possible that when the car doesn't start up right away, that it has to do with the air pressure or the air thinness, anything like that?
Well, first of all, the kid at O'Reilly with three whiskers wouldn't know an air conditioning problem from an armpit smell. So trying to have somebody fix your car like that, what you're saying is the volume of air is substandard, yes?
Yeah, that's what I'm gathering from what they say. But other cars don't have that issue,
okay.
But mine does.
Well, that's pretty easy to diagnose. The question is are we firing up the blower motor? or is it taking a while for the blower motor to work up speed because the fan is filled with jack-in-the-box papers that have been sucked off the passenger side floor? We also look to make sure the connections on the blower motor are all correct, and we look at the switch, and we're going to run 1, 2, 3, and 4 on the switch and make sure the fan motor does what it's supposed to. So there's this
okay,
is
we're not talking about air conditioning, right?
Yes, we are.
She's not.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, well, it doesn't turn on, meaning the car itself doesn't turn on. It takes a long time for it to turn over.
Okay, so let me stop. So when you say you try to start it, there's no noise, there's no clicking, and there's no rrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr
clicking.
Okay.
And the battery's been replaced.
Okay. Okay. All right. See, this is the communication gap that we have. What you're saying is you have to get the vernacular right. It cranks over, but it doesn't start.
That's it.
Okay. Let's use that. All right. The question then becomes, it cranks over, so we have a good battery. Cranks over, we have a good starter. So we're missing spark or fuel. And on your particular car, it's very likely that the same sensor does that, or it could be a bad fuel pump. This is what I want you to check. When it cranks over and it doesn't catch, I want you to do this. Turn the key on and count to 10. Don't crank it. Just turn the key on. Count to 10. Okay. Turn it off. Do the same thing 3 times. On. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Off. 1, 2, and then count. At the end of that test, if you hit the key, boom, it fires right up, then the fuel pump's bad.
Oh.
Okay?
Okay.
And it could be a fuel pressure regulator that's bad, but more than likely it's a fuel pump. So that test will tell us, but don't forget the vernacular, okay? Don't forget, it cranks over but doesn't start. That's the most important part. All righty, well, thank you. Good luck to you. Put your microphone down. God almighty. I can't believe. All right. Alger Stowers from ANS Transmission is here along with his wife, Shelley. Say hello, Alger.
Hello.
Okay, well, wait a minute. I'll bring you up now. Say hello again.
Hello.
Hello. ANS Transmission is for Alger and Sherry.
Shelley.
And, or it could be automatic or standard.
Right.
You would never tell me the truth. You would never tell me the truth. What is it?
Well, it could be my last name, too.
Oh, that's right. Alger Stowers.
Right.
So which is it? How was it named?
Automatic and standard.
Automatic and standard. Okay.
It was going to be more, but it would be bad.
All right, so here's the question. A guy called me the other day, and he says, you should have your employees on to talk about you.
Oh, okay.
Tell them all you want about me. You started working for me in 1979.
Yes, sir.
And I'll tell you the real quick story about Alger. He's in the transmission business. So he comes to me on a Saturday and he says, hey, can I change the transmission in my Nova?
Nova? Yes.
Okay. And I said, no, because you'll have the hoist tied up and then Monday morning we won't have that hoist. And Alger says, well, I'll be out, I promise, by Monday morning. And I said, what are you going to do? And he says, I'm going to take the automatic out and put a stick shift in it. I said, oh, my God, that thing will be here for a week. So I said, yeah, it has to be out by Monday morning or you're fired. You said,
right.
Fine. Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he's in front of my house laying rubber with his stick shift. He replaced he put a clutch pedal in it. He replaced the transmission. He cut a hole in the thing. He hooked up the shifter. He got the drive shaft. He got the cross member. And at 2 o'clock, he's laying rubber in front of my house.
Where'd I get the car?
I don't remember.
Your aunt.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, you have worked for me for 5, 6, 7 years.
Right.
And then you went into the transmission business.
Right.
Folks, ANS is predominantly a wholesale place.
Right.
And if she was running the shop, you wouldn't have half the problems if she would run the shop.
Probably.
Your wife. She knows how to say no. You don't know how to say no.
I don't.
Okay, but if you guys are up on Rose Lane?
Lone Cactus.
Well, which exit is it?
You got to get going north, got to get off on Rose Garden Lane.
Okay. Okay, and then you're going to go west.
Yeah, south you can get off on Deer Valley.
Okay. All right, so you've been in the transmission how long? How many years?
Since I was a kid.
Well, how many? Right. Well, you're about 26 now?
More than that.
Oh, okay. How many? He's about 30?
He's not 30. He's 56.
He's 56? Holy mackerel.
I was 16 when I worked for you.
Look at his hair's gray. That makes a lot of difference. I wish you would have been here for the whole show.
We just drive by and I saw your truck and I said, that's his truck.
How'd you get in?
Renee walked outside.
Oh, gosh darn. Put your headphones on real quick.
We had breakfast in Gilbert.
Got 50 seconds.
Okay. I want to tell you how much I love your husband. I want to tell you how much gray of my gray hair is directly attributed to him. I want you to know how many times that he made a mess at the gas station that I cleaned up. But I loved him like a son. His mother was one of the finest people I ever know. And so, and you too. And God bless you for marrying him. He needed some help. So that's Alger Stowers and his wife, Shelley, and from ANS Transmission in North Phoenix. Thank you. But next time, let me know you're coming, and we'll talk transmissions for an hour or so.
It was just a chance thing. I saw your truck.
I know. All right. Well, that's not a good enough excuse. All right. Mark Salem, mark at marksalem.com, mark at marksalem.com. If you have any questions, send an email. Give me a phone number so I can call you back. God bless you. Drive safe.